Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Every day, 10,000 baby boomers reach the typical retirement age of 65. But for tens of millions of Americans, retirement is not an option because they don't have enough money to swap years of working for a more leisurely life. Again, 10,000 people turn 65 every day in this country. The Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates that the number of seniors working has nearly tripled since the 1970s. According to a 2016 Economic Policy Institute report, nearly half of all families have no retirement account savings at all. Even for households in the 56 to 61 age range, with retirement as little as 4 years away, the median retirement account is only $17,000. The report also notes that participation in retirement savings plans is highly unequal across income groups. Nearly 9 in 10 families in the top income had retirement account savings, compared with fewer than 1 in 10 families in the bottom income bracket. So with widening inequality and the loss of good-paying jobs with benefits, when can people afford to retire? What will it take to fix this retirement crisis? Today, we are joined by two guests. Jeff Foe is the founder and now fellow at the Economic Policy Institute, a nonprofit think tank that was created to include the needs of low and middle income workers in economic policy discussions. Jeff Foe is the author of many books, including his latest, The Servant Economy, Where America's Elite is Sending the Middle Class. And Jeff Foe joins us from Washington, D.C. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Teresa Gilarducci, a labor economist and nationally recognized expert in retirement security. Teresa is professor of economics at the New School for Social Research and director of the New School's Retirement Equity Lab. She is the author of several books, including her latest, How to Retire with Enough Money and How to Know What Enough Is. And Teresa joins us from New York. Teresa. Hi, Teresa. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, hi.
Nice to have you. Well, the statistics are pretty bleak. We've got about 6.5 million seniors living in poverty. By 2030, there will be 72 million seniors living in poverty in America. And a lot of people don't know that 10,000 people turn 65 every day in this country. Teresa, is it fair to say that we have a retirement crisis?
Crisis is always used a lot. But the fact that we are going to have in our communities older people who are more fragile and vulnerable than they were in a couple of generations is my definition of a crisis. These people are vulnerable because their health is deteriorating. Their needs are only growing when society and their resources are withdrawing away from them. It's kind of a constant level of abandonment when people need it the most. And these are often people who have worked very hard during their lives, taking care of others or working in the economy. So it's something we decided we wouldn't tolerate when we passed Social Security and unions negotiated defined benefit plans. And we threw a lot of tax breaks at retirement. We decided that we were going to have people who live a lifetime of work have a dignified retirement. And we're going back on that promise, which means actually more need for welfare spending and more of a moral crisis around us.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, what would you add?
Well, I think that the problem, the financial problems of elderly people, are connected to the financial problems of young people. One group is leaving the labor force or trying to leave the labor force; the other is just coming in. And the common problem is the stagnation of wages and income for working people in America over the last three decades or so. Beginning in the late 1970s and continuing, wages for the average American worker have been pretty stagnant. And since most people get their income from working, this, in the end, is what contributes to their having inadequate income by the time they're ready to retire. So it's a problem of the elderly. It's a crisis of the elderly, but it's a crisis of the economy, in which over these decades, workers have lost bargaining power. And by bargaining power, I'm not just talking about unions, but workers in relation to their employers all over the country. There are a variety of reasons for this: the offshoring of jobs, decline of unions, the subsidization of Wall Street speculation instead of investing in job creation. But the net of all this is that the upward redistribution of income from the poor and the middle class to the rich is the fundamental cause, and it is felt at the end of one's work time, you know, with all this drama and tribulation.
Can we talk about just the changes that we have seen over the decades and how drastic they've been? Because I think about someone like my dad, who went to trade school and became a union sheet metal worker, had a good job, good retirement, and he was able to retire. But I think about what my dad, what his options would be today at age 21 or 22. I asked him, and he said, I'd probably have no union, I wouldn't have set hours, and I wouldn't have a retirement plan. In fact, he knows a lot of young guys on the job who are dealing with those realities. Teresa, can you talk to us just about how drastically things have changed since around the 70s?
Yes. In the 70s, someone who was retiring, like in a job that your dad had, would have a defined benefit plan and a Social Security system that would be growing. Social Security benefits actually increased in the 70s and 80s. So in their retirement period, if they retired in their 70s, their Social Security benefits would have been, you know, would have been indexed. So Medicare would have just come online. You know, it was just been 5 years old, so they would have been relieved of crushing medical expenditures. Their defined benefit pensions would be stewarded by their fellow workers who were still working, and there would have been increases in their pension as they were in retirement, because he probably started with a low one. And if your dad died, your mom, you know, the survivor, would have gotten a pension for the rest of their life. So that would have been the decade when people were really moving away, getting better than their grandfathers and great grandmothers. Those people would have done better than their fathers and their uncles. And it would have been appropriate because the economy was growing so much, and we were sharing our prosperity in lots of ways. Right, we were improving our schools, we were expanding colleges, and we were also giving workers a dignified retirement.
Jeff, what would you add?
I think Teresa is absolutely right. And the thing to remember here is that while the economy has not been producing the kinds of jobs that the previous generations have had, you know, workers in general have been producing wealth. This is still a very wealthy country, and our wealth is growing. The problem is that over the last few decades, the wealth has been channeled to the top. You know, before, say, the late 1970s, 1980, you look at those numbers and you see that productivity of the workers increased and their wages increased along with their productivity. That is, workers were creating wealth, and they were getting part of that wealth. They were sharing, as Teresa says. But since the late 1970s, early 80s, those curves on our graph has changed. And so while the workers are continuing to produce wealth, their wages and benefits, and, you know, the pensions were in the benefits, their wages and benefits have been flat. And so you have a situation in which what's changed in the economy over those years that Therese was talking about is that the distribution of wealth of the wealth that we produce has changed, and it's not going to get any better on the current trajectory. We are, you know, it's a common phrase to call this the gig economy. And everybody knows what that means. That means young people especially, but increasingly people in their middle age and older, working part-time, working at jobs where they're essentially the sole contractor, at jobs without benefits, jobs without security. I gave a talk a few weeks ago, and someone came up to me and he said, he said, it's like my daughter is a slasher. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, when she and her friends talk, they say, well, what are you doing now? And they say, I'm a slasher. I'm a waitress slash dog walker slash retail clerk. These are the jobs that don't pay enough and don't have enough benefits to contribute to the formulation of capital so that when you get to the end of your working life, you can afford to retire. Those jobs are disappearing. And just one other point here, the Bureau of Labor Statistics forecasts the places in the economy where the jobs are growing fastest over the next 10 years. And the top 10 occupations, of those top 10 occupations, only one, nurse, requires a college education. So what's happening to the economy, despite all this talk about go to school and learn, et cetera, is that the jobs we're producing do not produce enough income for people to hardly live on during their working life, much less to retire.
Jeff Foe is fellow at the Economic Policy Institute and author of The Servant Economy, and Teresa Ghilarducci is a labor economist and author of How to Retire with Enough Money. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. What is your retirement plan? What has really changed in generations, when you look at your parents, for example, and then your personal situation, regardless of your age? What are your thoughts about retirement? My younger brother just sent me a message saying, I was just thinking about that this morning. How am I going to retire, jumping from job to job? How is this going to work for different generations, given the realities that we're facing today? 866-798-8255. And then what about policy changes? What should policymakers do to seriously address this issue? Teresa, what would you add? Jeff was just talking about how people have to cobble together different jobs. And we've got people living much longer, not necessarily healthier, but a lot of older people cannot retire at 65. And they're also trying to cobble together different jobs. What are you hearing from people you've spoken with and interviewed?
So the people that I focus on are people who are nearing retirement and what their plans are. You know, what's their system. Now, a lot of people will say, well, I'm just going to work longer. You know, I don't really have any savings. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to keep on working, which is basically saying I'm not really going to think about it. And if I'm close enough or they're open to it, I say, well, let's talk about that. So people are in that group, older group and beyond, you know, 55 and above, more frequently moving in and out of retirement and unemployment. They are trying to retire and finding out that they can't make ends meet, so they hop back in. More likely, they are told to retire. You know, they're laid off or squeezed out of their job and never take a break but try to find another job. So it's really important to know, and I think Jeff would back me up, we haven't talked about this, is that this idea that it's just natural that we are a more innovative or footloose labor force than we ever have before is really not quite right. Blacks and women are staying a lot longer with their employers than they did in the past. So it's nothing about people and people who want to work or do work is changing. What is happening is that the jobs that people first get are in their 20s are usually jobs they're not well matched to. So there's a lot of job hopping in their 20s. So you see a lot of that happening. But by the time you get into your 30s, the job tenure in those jobs are usually pretty long, 15, 20, 25 years. Except lately, people are getting whacked in their 50s. People are leaving jobs, being squeezed out of jobs that they thought they were going to have much longer. That's actually what's happening in the market. Just let me summarize. It's the employers that are changing their relationship to workers, mm-hmm. not workers changing their relationship to the labor force. So for older people, we're finding a lot of downward mobility, that they aren't getting jobs after they've left their career jobs in their own industry or that use their own skills. They're going down. They're bidding down. And that evidence to me is because they don't have pensions. So the problem is pension erosion, not their job hopping behavior.
Can you talk a little bit more about retirement plans, Teresa? In recent years, pension plans have been replaced with 401ks, and yet
if only
half of workers don't have access to a retirement plan on the job. Can you talk about that?
Sure. The real pension plan called the defined benefit plan, and that was the pension you would get from your employer and it would last for the rest of your life. Remember our people in our 70s, about 70% of households had income from that kind of a plan. Maybe they cobbled together two defined benefit plans. But if you went from job to job, you had a defined benefit plan. Those kinds of plans were taken away by firms. Either they were replaced by firms with something called a 401k or defined benefit contribution plan, or firms that enter the labor market just didn't bother having any plan at all. So what we've ended up with are fewer people being covered by anything, 30 years later, and the people who are covered more likely have a 401k plan. I can talk to you about the characteristics of those 401k plans and why they aren't working, why they're a failure, and why 30 years later people aren't coming into retirement without enough savings because of those plans. Would you like me to talk about that?
Sure.
Okay, so the 401k plan, which is a defined benefit plan, and many of your listeners have it, and many of your listeners that have it, I will tell them it's better than nothing. But what you have is a very fragile product. It comes from your employer, and your employer chooses what you invest in. And you have no say in what the employer chooses you invest in. Your employer is barely competent to choose. So he or she has outsourced to a broker. The broker told your employer what to give you as a choices, but that broker might have been conflicted. They had some kind of a commercial relationship with the funds that they proposed that you have. So there you are with a set of funds that have a lot of high fees, most probably. You are told to choose among those funds where your savings could go. Now, like most of us, we weren't trained on how to do that. I wasn't also trained how to do my own dentistry. This is highly professional work. But in this area, people are literally left on their own in order to choose. So you choose a bunch of investments. Maybe you have some method of doing it. Maybe you pay someone to tell you how to do it, but you did it. Then you stay with that job for about four years or 5 years, and then you're told, well, you have to decide what to do with your 401k. Leave it, take it, roll it over. Most people spend it, especially if the bottom half of the income distribution. A lot of other people roll it into an IRA, individual retirement account. And those where the predators are really active. Those fees are even higher, and the investment choices are even worse. So you live a lifetime like this, going in and out of jobs that have a 401k, roll them into an IRA, spend some along the way, pay high fees to others, and you end up in retirement with an average benefit, if you're the bottom 75% of the income distribution, of something like $60,000. If you're at the top end, you have something like $112,000. And that will last you about 4 years. So we have built a system that is not preparing people for retirement for lots of reasons. But that's how it's worked. We've played it out.
And Teresa, do you have to leave us in 5 minutes, or can you stick around for a little while longer?
I can stick around for a few more minutes.
Okay, great. You have a solution to this, and let's talk about a solution before you have to leave. You have put forth a reform idea to create what's called a guaranteed retirement account. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So I have for 30 years tried to figure out a way to tweak the 401k system or reform it. And I have realized that a lot of the elements of the 401k system is what's standing in the way of decent reform. The first element is that employers and workers can decide whether or not to be in it. And this voluntary aspect of it is a big failure. The only reason Social Security works is because we all have to be in it. You know, no, we don't decide between, you know, a cashmere sweater and our 401k and our Social Security contribution. We just have to, like, pay our Social Security. So 401ks have to work the same way. The second reason the 401k system doesn't work is because of the vast array of investment options that no one is qualified to choose among. And the third reason is that when we retire, if we've done everything right when we get to retirement age, we have to decide to take $150,000 out, make it last the rest of our life, and that doesn't work. So the Guaranteed Retirement Account is a national plan. Everybody will have one. The employer and the employee put money into that fund. It's your account. You have it with it your whole life. It follows you from job to job. You can't take it out before you retire. And when you decide to take it out around 62 and above, you take it out as a lifelong income. It supplements your Social Security. So it takes a lot of the decisions of to save, not to save, where to invest it, what fees to pay, and then how to pay it out of the hands of the individual, and gives people what they want, which is secure income for the rest of their life. So it's a very simple alternative to the 401k. People can have their 401k as an IRA to supplement this. But what this does is get you to Social Security, the Guaranteed Retirement Account on top of that, gives everybody an adequate income, and what anybody wants above that, they can have.
And before we let you go, a lot of people rely on Social Security. The average check is about $1,200. The average increase this year is going to be just $4. And yet housing costs are so high, food is high. I mean, everything is just going up. What can people do to pressure policymakers to ensure that there's bigger increases in these Social Security checks?
Yeah, so those increases are just inflation adjustment. So what we need to do is get behind the good folks that protect Social Security, save our Social Security, and a lot of politicians who support Social Security. We have to expand and strengthen the system. Your only partner in this is going to be your representatives, because Social Security is a federal program. So we need to bind with our partners who we've elected to Congress and get them to be steadfast supporter of Social Security and Medicare, and to now expand and strengthen the system.
Well, Teresa, thanks for your work on this issue, and thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you. It's a good conversation.
Teresa Ghilarducci is a labor economist and author of many books. Her latest is How to Retire with Enough Money and How to Know What Enough Is. You can find more information about her work at yourcallradio.org. After the break, we'll continue speaking with Jeff Foe, fellow at the Economic Policy Institute, and his latest book is The Servant Economy, Where America's Elite is Sending the Middle Class. Today, we're talking about retirement. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on Your Call, on the phone, by sending an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or by going to the yourcallradio.org website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, call toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio. Coming up at 11, it's live news from the BBC. Stay with us.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation about what the next 4 years will look like for public education. The new Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, has no experience in public schools. Donald Trump's budget calls for $9 billion in cuts to the Department of Education. We'll be speaking with Bay Area educators about how they are preparing for potential changes. And then on Thursday, we'll have a conversation about trans equality and respect. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about retirement. 10,000 people turn 65 every day in the United States. With inequality at record highs and older people working longer, we are in a crisis. So what policy changes do we need to restore the promise of retirement? We'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jeff Foe is fellow at the Economic Policy Institute and author of The Servant Economy. And Jeff, we have full lines, but before we get to those calls, we heard from Teresa about a solution to create guaranteed retirement accounts. What changes would you like to see?
Well, I think that's a very, very important step in trying to reform all of this. It's also important that the securities that and protections that the elderly have be maintained. We're seeing right now an erosion of some of those protections. For example, this administration is trying to do away with the law that says financial advisors have to give priority to the interests of their clients. Now, you would think that's sort of a basic rule of the marketplace, but for years, as Teresa says, the elderly, especially, who are desperate, and I can tell you as someone who is well over 65, you're not as sharp as you were when you were 35. These people are particularly vulnerable to fraud, to deception, and also to nonsense. Desperate people trying to figure out how to survive on $16,000 a year from Social Security get drawn into schemes and fraudulent kinds of things, much more easily, and all that's understandable. So having laws that protect people from these kinds of predators is very, very important. We need the most important thing in life as you get older and older is health care. When you're 30, you don't worry about seeing a doctor, but I can tell you when you're 70, you do. Yeah. And for so many Americans, our health care system, even with Medicare, is not sufficient. The Medicare premiums keep going up. For the elderly who need serious help, need to go into nursing homes, there's Medicaid, and we're in the process of cutting that back as we speak. So maintaining what we have is important. And the reason I focus on that is because there is a view in a lot of policy circles, especially by people who don't have to worry about paying the rent, that the elderly are doing fine. And we're spending too much on Social Security and Medicare, and that's taking it away from the children. I just want to say that that's nonsense. We should be doing better for the elderly, and we should be doing better for children. And the reason we don't is what I said before, and that is the income and wealth of this country over the last 30 years or so has been sucked up to the 1%. So there's enough wealth in America to educate our children and to provide decent health care and a dignified old And that's the core of the problem. You know, one of the things that often happens is, so here you are, you're 55 or 60 years old, you lost the secure job you had, you thought it was secure, and now you're working at Burger King, and your feet are sore, you're tired, and the person next to you may be 20 years old working at Burger King. And you're both vying for the same kinds of jobs, and it creates what is a really unhealthy social division between the elderly and the younger people, and that gets exploited by politicians.
Well, we've got full lines. Let's hear from. Sorry, my machine just Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show. Hello, Lisa. Let's go to... Oh, Lisa, are you there? Is Lisa there? Let's go to Ruth Ann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann.
You had about the guaranteed retirement income, but I was wondering what the guests thought about the issue that's been raised several times all over the place about the guaranteed annual regular income. So people would get a regular income separate from, you know, whether they were 30 years old or 45 years old, working, non-working, there would be a guaranteed income that they would get.
Right. Well, thank you, Ruth Ann. Sorry for that loud noise. This is getting some traction, Jeff, the basic guaranteed income. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there are two arguments for that. One is that increasingly jobs that provided a ladder into the middle class, especially in industrial jobs, they are shrinking. And they're shrinking for a number of reasons. But over time, automation and technological change are eliminating the jobs, and they should be eliminating the jobs that are the hardest jobs and the jobs that people don't want. Over time, the opportunities for good jobs is going to decrease. Yet the country will still be generating this wealth. And a guaranteed annual income makes sense because it is a way to share the benefits of that work. And the wealth that's being created from that work. So that's one argument for it, and I think it's a good argument. In a sense, let the machines do the work, and let's all benefit from not only the income but a lower work week. You know, we really have not changed the work week since the 1930s, and we're a much wealthier country now, so we can afford a guaranteed annual income that kicks in, especially when people are working less. The second point is that it's probably the most efficient way to help the poor. What we have is a plethora of welfare programs, of social support programs, and they're good programs. They're people are working hard at them, but the simplest way to eliminate poverty is to provide people with money. And that's the argument for a guaranteed annual income. You can do away with a lot of the bureaucracy, do away with a lot of the paperwork, send everybody a check.
Mm. Well, thank you, Ruth Ann. We'll continue to follow that issue because it is getting a lot of traction, a guaranteed basic income. Let's go next to Lisa in San Francisco, who's back. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Listen, this issue is so immersed in so many issues here. I'm a union member, basically I believe about 6.5% of the people in the United States will actually belong to unions, which is a really, really low number. And that's, I think, due in, of course, in part to it, the attacks on unions by big business, but also because there's been a trend towards business unionism where instead of mobilizing workers to increase more union participation and to actually create more union jobs, there's been more money spent towards politicians and Democrats in particular who have their hands in the cookie jar in Wall Street. and don't necessarily represent the workers that they claim to represent. And then, you know, that gives way to a lot of this populist kind of talk by Republicans, who, on the other hand, are both Democrats and Republicans are borrowing from Social Security and have been doing so for many years already, which they don't even pay back. And then they're saying that Social Security is losing money, when in reality Social Security is one of the best programs out there, except it's being defunded and because of all this privatization. You know, so I mean, they're trying to steer us towards what's called a defined contribution plan, where you know how much you're putting in, but you don't know how much you're going to get out.
Hmm. Well, Lisa, thank you. You brought up a couple good points there. And we have a related email from Shane, who says, I'm 35. I just graduated with a bachelor's degree 2 years ago. I really feel for millennials. I've been lucky enough to get work with my degree, but mostly it's been contract work with minimal benefits. I believe the root of our current failure to provide workers with enough long-term security is the system itself. She says, unchecked capitalism and economic inequality is the problem here. Our great-grandparents fought their way out of the service class by forming unions, but over time, the boss class has managed to peel back protections, and now people like me are left with increasing financial insecurity. We work harder for longer hours and have less to show for it. We need to take cues from other countries that have shifted to a more equitable society and move to a democratic socialist system where our government and institutions work for the people and not just for the elite. What about that, Jeff?
Well, there's a lot of issues there, but let me address a couple of them. One is the last point that you and the caller made about capitalism. I mean, capitalism, and you don't have to be a socialist or a Marxist to get this point, capitalism by its very nature creates inequality, that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. So you need institutions that balance that out. And that's what labor unions were. It's no accident that in the best years of American history for working people were those years when the labor movement came into full bloom. And today, your other caller is absolutely right. There's been a attack on labor union from unions on the right, and there's been a disinterest among Democrats, the establishment Democrats, in supporting those unions that were essential for the passage of Social Security, for Medicare, and so many things, including civil rights. That story often gets abused. So that the institutions have, as the institutions get weaker and weaker, the natural tendencies of the market, that is to concentrate wealth at the top, take over. And that's what we're seeing now. Your first caller mentioned the decline in unions, and she's absolutely right. One number that's really interesting, though, while we have about 7%, only 7% of the labor force in unions, if you ask people, and polls have done this, would you like to belong to a union to help you bargain with your employer? 40% of American workers say yes. Now, if you ask them, would you like to belong to an organization that bargains collectively with your employer, that's a definition of a union without using the word, 60% of Americans say yes. So the vast majority of people who work for a living in this country are aware that somehow or other they're losing their ability to bargain for their share of the wealth that's being created.
Jeff Foe is a fellow at the Economic Policy Institute and author of many books, including The Servant Economy, Where America's Elite is Sending the Middle Class. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about retirement. 10,000 people turn 65 every day in the United States. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. What are your retirement plans regardless of your age? what concerns you about retiring and what policy changes do we need to address these issues. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. A couple of comments, I guess. One is on your emailer. I think his points were absolutely right on the money. And if anybody didn't realize that capitalism and class warfare, you're seeing it in spades now, and you'll continue to see it under Trump. The other thing is that one issue that didn't come up is the people who are a long time disabled, who are getting, if they're getting benefits now, are finding it increasingly difficult for years to live on those, and that's going to get harder and harder. So I have a question about to your guest, and that is this. Why couldn't a state like California, which is really a rich, very rich state, set up some kind of parallel system to the Social Security system that the federal government has, so that instead of worrying about pensions, you putting it in a, you know, an IRA or individual account, you'd get taxed, you know, depending on your income, and it would go into a retirement account just like CalPERS or CalSTRS in the state of California, but this would be for private individuals. So I'm wondering if it's possible that that kind of alternative system could be set up.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly technically possible. There's no reason, no particular economic reason why you couldn't do it. The obstacles, of course, are, and you, in being in California, know better than I do, the obstacles are political. You know, even now, people who get Social Security benefits and Medicare benefits are often propagandized by the right to resent the federal government, as if, you know, the federal government wasn't the thing that essentially is the mechanism that's providing us with these benefits. But there's not only been an attack on trade unions over the last 30 or 40 years, there's been an attack on the public sector. And that, again, as one of your callers says, is coming from both the right and the left. One of the biggest privatizers that we've had in the White House in the last several decades was Bill Clinton, who wanted to privatize everything in order to make, quote, government as efficient as business. Well, we know that's a misleading characterization of the way the world works. Wall Street got bailed out by the federal government after the crash of 2008. The federal government did not bail out the 20 or 30 million homeowners who lost their homes because of that crash. They bailed out Wall Street. That's socialism. Donald Trump got bailed out four or five times by bankruptcy courts. That's socialism for the rich. So one of the problems here is the mindset of our political debate, which because of both Democrats and Republicans, not just Republicans, has shifted us to think that somehow or other public programs are alien to us and not American, when the exact opposite is true. There was a famous confrontation once with one Democratic politician in a supermarket where the elderly woman started to yell at him and said, "Keep the federal government's hands off my Medicare."
Well,
that shows you the status of the propaganda war.
Yeah, and we saw people say that when they expressed opposition to the Affordable Care Act when it was first passing. Speaking of retirement accounts, Jeff, there's a piece in the Washington Post, February 27th. Unfortunately, these very important pieces of news are not getting much attention because of what we're facing with Donald Trump and the tweets. But according to this story, some states like California are crafting special accounts they say will make it easier for tens of millions of people to save for retirement. But those efforts could be blocked by Republicans and business groups who argue that states should not be launching retirement accounts. The House passed resolutions last month that call for undoing a Labor Department rule to make it easier for states to move forward with these plans, and the resolution now needs to be voted on by the Senate. What do you think about this?
Yeah, well, of course, the economy has become so
sort of absorbed by Wall Street mentality, that simple plans that were openly discussed and possible a while ago are constantly being denounced by the right and by the business community as too much socialism or government intervention. But gradually, you know, because there's a crisis, and Teresa laid out some of that very, very well, because there is a crisis, the crisis doesn't stop when the people who are over 65 now die. As you say, every day there's more and more people becoming elderly. If you're 25 today and you're lucky, you're going to be 70 at some point. And so what is needed is a political consciousness that we're all in this together. And what I mean by this is life. You know, we're not just talking about some abstract politics here. We're talking about the only thing that we know, and that is life for us and life for everybody else in your community. And so as this crisis grows, as the baby boomers and the millennials, as the spread of deprivation among the elderly increases, you're in the end going to have more and more pressure for some sort of community, collective, financial solution to this. And whether it starts at the state level, and I think California is a great place to start a lot of things because of its relative wealth, and grows that way state by state, or at some point we elect a federal government that understands these things, I think it's going to come. The tragedy is that so many people between now and then are going to have a life as in retirement that loses its dignity, full of pain and full of anxiety about where the next meal is going to come from. Mm.
Well, thank you for calling, Greg. We have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Craig in San Leandro. Hi, Craig. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just going to mention that, when we had, before we lost the unions, it was not only union members who had benefits, but it was also non-union people, because what would happen with a lot of employers is that they knew that if they didn't provide benefits, that their place would turn union. So, and it's interesting because Social Security is like that, as well as Medicare. With Medicare people, we had a system where people had pretty good coverage, because almost every employer was providing those benefits for people.
Right. Well, thank you for calling in, Craig. Jeff, what are you hearing in Washington? Donald Trump said he wasn't going to touch Social Security and Medicare, but Paul Ryan and Republicans have wanted to privatize Social Security for years. I mean, even some Democrats were on board with that at one time.
Right. Yeah, Trump said he also wasn't going to touch Medicaid. And the Republican bill that he supported and that got defeated last Friday would have decimated Medicaid for a number of people by turning it over to the states and allowing the states to use the money for other things and to change eligibility, et cetera. So I think that given the fact that this administration has proven itself to be fairly incompetent so far, as well as a number of other things, it's going to be a while before they can get themselves together to push that old Republican plan to privatize Social Security. But meantime, they can do a lot of damage to things like Medicaid and Medicare. Lots of rules and regulations that an administration can implement that don't need a congressional approval. I think this whole thing, Trump's election was a nomination was a setback for some of those Republicans. And I think it's going to be a while before they can get through all their mess now to get it together to try to privatize Social Security. Where Trump himself is on any of this stuff, the Lord only knows. I mean, on Thursdays he's going to protect Medicaid, and on Tuesdays he's going to gut it. So it's your guess is as good as mine about that. But I think Social Security, for a while at least, is pretty safe.
And final thoughts, Jeff. I mean, here in the Bay Area, there are so many amazing organizations working to ensure that people lead productive and decent lives with dignity. But they're just tapped. I mean, the demand is high. The people working for these organizations are having a hard time themselves making ends meet just because things are so expensive here.
Yes. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts, final thoughts on this?
I think that it's tragic to say it, but I think the more that people understand that we're all in this together, that the people who are trying to provide these services, you know, they have their own lives. There are situations in which I know that because the conservative ideology in Washington has squeezed the eligibility, you have situations where, for example, people providing child care in, you know, public child care facilities, they cannot afford to have they cannot afford to give that quality of care to their own children, yet they're not eligible for getting the public service. And what that does is that tends to divide people and make, you know, a part of the working class feel like, well, the people at the bottom, they're getting all these benefits, and we're not getting anything. So part of what's going on is this effort that divides people into you and me rather than us. And I think, again, on this aging issue, when people who are 25 understand that if they're lucky, they're going to be 75 someday, maybe that will help give us a common understanding and then a common action to deal with these issues.
Jeff Foe is a fellow at the Economic Policy Institute and author of many books. His latest is The Servant Economy, where America's elite is sending the middle class. Jeff, thank you for your work and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation about what the next 4 years will look like for public education. How are local schools preparing for potential changes as Donald Trump's budget calls for $9 billion in cuts to the Department of Education? That's tomorrow. Your Call is produced here at KALW. Malihe Razazan produced today's show. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. David LaTulip is our studio engineer. I'm Rose Aguilar. Thanks for joining us.
Beginning next week, Your Call will be rebroadcast at 8 p.m. with a number of different programming schedule changes going into effect beginning of April, including the BBC's World Have Your Say, which is going out of production. So in its place on Thursdays at 11, we'll have On Point. Next, it's the BBC Newsroom, live from the BBC in London. This is 91.7 KALW San Francisco. The time is 11 o'clock.
At 18 hours GMT, welcome to the newsroom from the BBC World Service. I'm Alex Ritson. Donald Trump is about to overturn large parts of US global warming policy. Environmentalists are furious.
I think it is a climate destruction plan in place of a climate action plan.
We're in the Iraqi city of Mosul as forces fighting IS are warned about human shields.
Officers say this isn't street fighting anymore, it's room-to-room fighting. They do have an alternative, of course, which is to call in airstrikes and level the area, but they've got to win a political battle here as well.
There have been violent protests in Paris over the killing of a Chinese man by French police. Germany's interior minister has condemned reports that Turkey's intelligence agencies are spying on suspected opponents of President Erdogan in Germany. And how do you fancy a glass of virtual lemonade?
The colour has changed, but also your tongue is being stimulated with electricity, which tricks your taste buds into thinking you're getting sour tastes when you're really not.
You're listening to the BBC.